Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Community Outreach Center gets little free library. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County ISD's Community Outreach Center got its first little free library Monday, courtesy of Georgia Hayes. Hayes has given of her time with ECISD's Volunteers and Partners program for 30 years, since her two sons were young. Most of her three decades have been spent at Gonzales Elementary School. She purchased the little free library, which is shaped like a small house and has a glass front door, and decorated it. "I'm a firm believer that children need to read. They need access to books," Hayes said. "Not everybody can make it to the library." Hayes credits a teacher named Jessie Smith with starting her volunteer career. "She thought I could hang the moon when I didn't think I could, and she taught me at 34 years old that I didn't have to be scared to talk in front of people. I could handle things, and so I've been doing it ever since," Hayes said. The children are what keeps her going. "I love kids. I love when the little light bulb goes off. They struggle and struggle. Then all of a sudden one day it's bing," Hayes said. A native Odessan, Hayes and her husband Wilbur have two sons. The couple has been married for 43 years. Scott Randolph, director of school attendance at the Community Outreach Center, said families come through when they register for school. "This is the first official little free library the center has had. In the past, we've had a little Tupperware box on the ground that said free, and every once in a while we would have books. So this is the first real system like this we have," Randolph said. He added that he thinks people will enjoy having it there. "It will be placed outside on a stand and include books for all ages. Oftentimes, we'll get families that will be in shelters, and they really have nothing with them. So whenever they would see free stuff in the box, they'll take it. The kids love it. It's definitely needed. We also have a food bank here, so families that are needy will come, and they'll get food and stuff like that. So this just ties into the education so beautifully," Randolph said. He added that he can obtain clothes, and they have a uniform closet and can help with basic needs. Debbie Lieb, Community Engagement Specialist Volunteers, said VIP's goal was to have a little free library at every campus. "Georgia just said, 'Let me buy one. Where do we need one? And so this is the place.' She bought it, she decorated it, she's donating it," Lieb said. "She has such a generous heart. She keeps giving," Lieb added. She said she loves reading. "It's one of my favorite things, and I really want everyone to have access to books to read. I love to cook, so cookbooks are always fun. Getting new recipes as well. This is my hometown, so I love giving back to my community," Lieb said. She added that she has two little free libraries that need to be adopted, and she needs volunteer to deliver meals to ECISD's remote learners. If anyone is interested, they should contact Lieb at 432-456-9012 or Deborah, Deborah, dot Lieb, Lieb, at Ector County ISD. That's Deborah.Lieb at Ector County ISD. .org. If anyone is interested, they should contact Lieb at 432-456-9012. That's 432-456-9012. Or Deborah.Lieb, that's Deborah, dot Lieb, at ectorcountyisd.org. That's deborah.lieb@hectorcountyisd.org. ECISD, www.hectorcountyisd.org/page/809. On the net, littlefreelibrary.org. Previous coverage, tinyurl.com/11pw30el. Police looking for man involved in pawn shop theft. OANews@OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is searching for a man who reportedly stole an electric guitar from a pawn shop. The reported theft happened November 15th at the Easy Pawn, located at 917 North Grandview Avenue, an OPD press release detailed. The man reportedly stole an electric guitar and fled the scene in a gray truck. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/2QQO5VMU. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-00202024. Police searching for man involved in theft at Walmart. OANews@OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a man who reportedly stole $155 worth of property at Walmart. The reported theft happened around 5:30 p.m. January 1st at the Walmart located at 4210 North JBS Parkway, an OPD press release detailed. Investigation reportedly showed a man stole approximately $155 worth of property and exited the store through the Automotive Care Center. The man is possibly occupying a silver Ford Taurus. OPD has released photos of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/4QR289AW. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective J. Campbell at 432-335-3328 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-000053. Man charged with assaulting, spitting on police officer. OANews@OAOA.com. A 27-year-old man was arrested when he reportedly struck a police officer in the face 3 times and spit on the same officer 3 times after the man assaulted his mother. Israel James Salinas was charged with harassment of a public servant, a third-degree felony, assaulting a public servant, a third-degree felony, resisting arrest, search of transport, a Class A misdemeanor, and assault family violence, a Class C misdemeanor. The incident started around 11:35 a.m. Saturday in the 4600 block of Valley Brook Lane. A series of Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavits detail. OPD officer Bobby Pietropoglio was reportedly dispatched to the listed location after a request for an officer call. The complainant, identified as Christina Salinas, stated that her son, Israel Salinas, had been in an argument. That argument escalated when Israel Salinas aggressively grabbed his mother by her right arm without her consent. Christina Salinas stated she was in fear for her and her family's safety and that her son's aggression toward her and the family had been steadily growing, the affidavit detailed. Israel Salinas reportedly attempted to prevent Officer Pietro Pollo from arresting him by assaulting the officer. Pietro Pollo was struck 3 times in the face. Pietro Pollo was also spit on 3 times by Salinas, the affidavit detailed. Salinas intentionally spit on Pietro Pollo as he leaned past other officers to spit on him. Salinas was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has 3 bonds, totaling $31,500, and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Opinion. National View. Biden's canceling of Keystone XL pipeline, pure politics. The point. It is clear that the United States will continue to be dependent on fossil fuels for decades. President Biden's decision to cancel the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline has a touch of the theatrical about it. Signing the cancellation order on the first full day of his administration, the president drew applause from environmentalists and boos from a number of labor unions. Native American governments praised the action, but the premier of Alberta, Canada, was quick to give it a bad review. The high drama speaks to the symbolic aspects of the Keystone XL project. First proposed in 2008, the pipeline was planned to carry Canadian crude oil from the province of Alberta to refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast. It would have crossed the border in Montana. The Keystone XL pipeline drew early opposition from Indigenous people in Canada and Native American leaders in the U.S. It was also opposed by ranchers whose land would be crossed by the project. In 2011, climate movement activists raised objections to the Keystone XL, citing the carbon contained in Canadian tar sand deposits. There were protests outside the White House aimed at pressuring President Barack Obama to reject the permits for the project. By that November, facing re-election, Obama had called for a delay to allow for additional review, and in 2015, he rejected it. In 2019, President Donald Trump granted Canadian developer TC Energy a permit to build the $8 billion project. It was expected to employ 11,000 people in the U.S. this year. Those jobs are now gone. Officials in the Biden administration have suggested that workers may be retrained to build solar panels and other green energy infrastructure. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said they're very eager to see those workers continue to be employed in good-paying union jobs, even if they might be different ones. Not everyone sees that as a realistic possibility, especially for workers already in the prime of their careers. One member of Pipeliners Local Union 798 told Fox News, "You spend a lifetime fine-tuning your skills, and if you go start another job, you're starting at the bottom. I doubt that these politicians would like it if someone told them to go start over and find a different job." Biden's decision signed away potential tax revenue as well as jobs. The state of Montana had estimated that it would collect $63 million per year in revenue from the pipeline project. Yet it is clear that the United States will continue to be dependent on fossil fuels for decades, and the Keystone XL project is only one of several planned pipelines. Biden has not made a decision about the others. One project is the Dakota Access Pipeline, which drew protests at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota during the last year of the Obama administration. The other is Line 3, a pipeline that is also planned to bring crude oil from Canada to the U.S., crossing the border in Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz has given his approval. The Biden administration is under pressure from environmentalists and indigenous leaders to cancel those pipeline projects along with the Keystone XL. But labor groups are pushing hard to preserve the projects and their high-paying jobs. The argument for and against one is the same as for the others. There's no moral high ground in canceling Keystone XL alone. Perhaps the costly decision was more a political statement, a high-profile repudiation of Biden's predecessor, than an environmental one. The Orange County Register. A barrier to abortion can be deadly in a pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic has given a big boost to methods of bringing health care to people remotely, known as telemedicine. If there's a lethal contagion going around, a doctor's office is one obvious place to avoid, if at all possible, and virtual visits make that option more feasible. So last year, the federal government took steps to spare Americans from risking their health in pursuit of treatment. The Department of Health and Human Services allowed Medicare to cover more remote services while letting physicians prescribe controlled substances without examining the patient in the flesh. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention encourages doctors to use telemedicine and advises patients to get prescriptions delivered. We are empowering medical providers to serve patients wherever they are during this national public health emergency, said an HHS official. But there is one big bad exception. The Food and Drug Administration still demands that women seeking medication abortions troop to a doctor's office to get the prescribed drug. It's a requirement that never made sense as a way to protect women's health. During a pandemic, it means deliberately forcing them into conditions that are bound to spread the virus and cost lives. The abortion pill at issue is Mifeprex, also known as RU486. Taken in combination with another drug in the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, it is 97% effective in inducing abortion. It is also very safe. The FDA reports that major adverse events, such as serious bleeding, are exceedingly rare. A woman is about 14 times more likely to die from childbirth than from abortion. The number of American women who die each year from abortion complications is in the single digits, and the mortality risk is lowest for medication abortions. By contrast, more than 3,000 women of childbearing age have died of COVID-19. Yet the FDA somehow thinks it's wise to subject women to the large risks of the virus in the name of protecting them from the minuscule risks of abortion pills. As it happens, the rule doesn't even advance its supposed purpose. Doctors may evaluate and advise the patient remotely. She then has to travel to the clinic or hospital to get the drug, even if she isn't seeing the physician or getting any other services. She is not allowed to get it at a pharmacy of either the walk-in or mail-order variety. Whatever tiny health hazard there is in a medication abortion, of course, comes only later when she takes the pill. Any adverse reaction would occur then. But the FDA doesn't insist that she swallow it in a medical facility under the watchful eye of a doctor or nurse. She can do it at home, at work, or at a remote backcountry campsite, as far as the agency is concerned. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists notes, Mifeprex and its generic are the only FDA-approved drugs for which the FDA regulates where the patient can obtain the drug, but neither specifies where the patient must take it, nor requires any supervision of the patient as the drug is administered. The logic is beyond comprehension. Forcing a pregnant woman to go to a clinic to get the pill is like forcing a football player to wear a helmet when he's watching TV. It serves no purpose. In the case of these women, though, it can be a real obstacle, requiring travel, expense, time off from work and childcare arrangements. The journey, even if it's just across town, can also mean more potential exposures to the virus. Last year, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists filed a lawsuit to lift the rule, and in July, a district court blocked its enforcement. But that decision was overturned, leaving the mandate in place. And the Biden administration, which has taken steps to expand access to abortion counseling and services, has yet to rescind this obviously unfair and dangerous requirement. Advocates of strict regulation of abortion providers invariably claim to be trying to protect the health of women, but the infallible effect and the true purpose is to make abortion harder to get, forcing some women to endure the far higher risks of childbirth. The FDA restrictions on abortion pills do the same thing, compounded by the additional peril of COVID-19. The rule erects a troublesome hurdle for women exercising a constitutionally protected freedom. But it's not just a needless burden. For some women in a pandemic, it is bound to be a fatal one. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more. Read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Friday, February 9th, 2021. Obituaries. Ronald Leon Browning, Fort Worth. At the age of 61, Ronald Leon Browning, son of Lois Collie Browning and the late Ronald Heflin Browning, passed away on February 5th, 2021, in Fort Worth, Texas. Leon was born in Alexander City, Alabama, on November 13th, 1959. Leon is survived by his wife, Debbie Browning, his son, Cody Browning, and wife, Jacqueline, his caregiver, Kathy Browning, and daughter, Callista Spates. He is also survived by his granddaughters, Charlotte Browning and Eliza and Lydia Blash, sister Denise Graham and brother-in-law Mark McBinge, nephew Adam Spates, and niece Ashley White, as well as other nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his brothers, James Browning and Barney Browning. Memorial services will be held for close family and friends. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. George William Carver, Odessa. George William Carver, 82, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on February 6th, 2021. He was born in Ashdown, Arkansas on November 21st, 1938, to George Hayes Carver and Tressie Griffin Carver. George was preceded in death by his parents, his sister Mary Ann, his brother Jim Bob, and his wife Sarah. He is survived by his sister Margie McDowell of Texarkana, Arkansas, son Don and wife Cindy of Amarillo, Texas, son Kyle and wife Sharon of Odessa, Texas, grandchildren Brock Ball and wife Amanda, Savannah Carver, Kylie York and husband Cody, and Colton Carver and wife Ashley, as well as four great-granddaughters, Alexa, Haddison, Bellamy, and Bexley, and one great-grandson, Wrangler James. Services are scheduled for Wednesday, February 10th at 1 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny in Odessa. Death notices. Gilberto R. Marquez, Odessa. Gilberto R. Marquez, 78, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 10th, 2021, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Faustino Natividad Baeza, Odessa. Faustino Natividad Baeza, 52, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 6th, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 11th, 2021, at Odessa Spanish Seventh-day Adventist Church. Interment will be held at a later date in Saragossa Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Deborah Lee Filler Croom, Fort Worth. Deborah Lee Filler Croom, 67, of Cleburne, died Friday, February 5th, 2021, in Fort Worth. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Crozier Pearson Cleburne Funeral Home of Cleburne. Martin Martinez Teen Marquez, Odessa. Martin Martinez Teen Marquez, 62, of Odessa, died Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 9th, 2021, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 9th, 2020. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, West Texas Intermediate Settles Near $58, by Andres Guerra-Luz and Alex Longley from Bloomberg. Oil in London rose above $60 a barrel for the first time in more than a year in a rally that's dividing the world's top oil trading houses. Global benchmark Brent futures surged 2.1% Monday. Surpassing the key marker is another milestone in a stellar comeback from the depths of the pandemic, which forced countries to lock down and devastated economies. Trading house Trafigura Group sees prices moving even higher as refiners increase processing rates to meet rising product demand amid tight physical crude supplies. However, with a full-fledged demand recovery yet to take shape, futures may have rallied too far too fast, especially with key technical indicators signaling crude is in overbought territory. The world's largest independent oil trader, Vital SA, and rival Gunvor Group Limited, both expressed caution over the recent rally. West Texas Intermediate for March delivered gailed $1.12 to $57.97 a barrel. Brent rose $1.22 to settle at $60.56 a barrel. Both benchmarks are the highest level since later January 2020. Be concerned all you want, but oil prices continue to rip, said Bob Yager, head of the futures division at Mizuho Securities. There are some good demand-side factors and some good supply-side factors, which are all conspiring to push prices higher. But they could trade lower fast at any given moment. Helping buttress oil's recovery has been a historical production cut agreement by OPEC+. Global stockpiles in onshore tanks and floating storage are estimated by the International Energy Agency to have shrunk by about 300 million barrels since the group made deep reductions in May. Meanwhile, reduced supply and a COVID-19 vaccine-driven demand boost have entrenched the oil futures price curve in a bullish backwardation structure, which encourages more draining of oil tanks. China has been a key driver of the market rebound. The number of tankers sailing toward the nation jumped to a six-month high on Friday. Royal Dutch Shell PLC Chief Executive Officer Ben van Beurden said last week that fuel sales in China are back into significant growth mode. Meanwhile, Indian demand is almost back to a year ago levels as consumption of cooking fuels and gasoline surged on the back of forced lifestyle changes due to the virus. Saudi Arabia's production cut gives people a lot more confidence in OPEC Plus's ability to manage supply, said Peter McNally, global head for industrials, materials, and energy at Third Bridge. OECD inventories have been drawing, and it looks like they're going to continue to head lower with OPEC steering the ship. Aside from WTI and Brent's 14-day relative strength indexes hovering above the 70 level, pointing to oil being overbought, other technicals also suggest a correction is in store for crude's red-hot rally. Both benchmarks settled above their upper Bollinger bands on Monday, a signal to some investors that prices may be due for a pullback. All the while, a rebound in fuel demand remains elusive, with a further slowdown in San Francisco traffic in January serving as the latest sign of the hobbling recovery. The market is getting ahead of itself in terms of a post-vaccine euphoria, Mike Miller, the head of Vital's Asian operations, said Sunday in an interview with Dubai-based Gulf Intelligence. Gains beyond $60 a barrel are unlikely, because that would prompt energy companies to ramp up production, Gunvor Chief Executive Officer Torbjørn Tornquist said on Friday. This article is entitled, Big Oil Stocks Rally Despite Democrats' Fossil Fuel Stance, by Michael Bolusky, Bloomberg. U.S. oil and gas stocks, by far the worst performers last year, are standing out as the best in 2021, a turnaround that might seem a bit surprising given the new balance of power in Washington. Companies including ExxonMobil Corporation, Diamondback Energy Inc., and Marathon Oil Corporation have posted double-digit gains this year as a rebound in oil prices and the prospect of an economic recovery have outweighed risks to the industry from a Joe Biden administration. The S&P 500 Energy Index is up 12% this year compared to 2020's 37% plunge. However, Wall Street is now assessing whether these gains are sustainable, as Democrats commit to speeding the shift away from fossil fuels. Companies that extract gas and oil from shale rock using a process known as fracking are already under pressure to reduce spending rather than invest in production. Any additional regulatory measures could be received poorly by investors. So far, Biden has made good on a campaign promise to cancel the Keystone XL oil pipeline and issued a moratorium on new oil and gas leasing on federal lands. While such moves can be a short-term boon for crude prices by restraining supply, they mark what is likely to be a strong pivot in energy policy away from hydrocarbons. The bull case for oil majors will hinge on self-help measures that increase investor interest, as shareholders continue to pressure the group to show greater austerity and return profits rather than use the money to boost production. Coming out of last year's price crash, most energy executives are preaching restraint. I have a hard time seeing the need for U.S. producers over the next several years to get back to double-digit growth, Devon Energy Corporation Chief Executive Officer Rick Muncrief said in a recent interview. For this management team, if we really think about 2021, let's keep it flat. As the industry looks to offset the impact of policies that promote green energy and discourage the use of fossil fuels, analysts at Tudor, Pickering, Holt & Company see gains of 20% to 50% for exploration and production stocks under a scenario of Brent crude prices at $60 a barrel. They also say Wall Street's message about avoiding growth couldn't be any simpler. If the U.S. returns to the drill bit in an aggressive way, we sense clients may start to sell regardless of the value opportunity, analyst from the Houston-based energy investment bank told clients in a note. Generalist investors who seek to own assets in a wide range of industries may play a key role in the near-term direction of energy stocks. They've been largely absent from the energy sector recently, and some could opt not to return if the value proposition doesn't materialize, said Laura Lau, who manages about $1.2 billion of assets at Brumpton Corporation in Toronto. Energy bulls are used to balancing supply and demand with regulatory risk, but before generalists move in en masse to prop up the sector's rally, they'd need to be convinced that their investments aren't about to be roiled by an unexpected price shift or policy decision. You almost need them to have a fear of missing out, Lau said. Momentum breeds momentum. This article is entitled, Oil's Remarkable Rebound from a Year of Catastrophe, by Grant Smith, Alex Longley, and Andy Hoffman from Bloomberg. 1 year after the first glimmers of the catastrophe awaiting global oil markets, from deserted Chinese cities to grounded jets, crude is staging a remarkable turnaround. The crisis, triggered by the deadly coronavirus, was the worst the petroleum industry has ever seen. Fuel demand crashed by a fifth. Prices slumped below zero, producers fought viciously over customers, and more than a billion surplus barrels poured into storage tanks around the world. Yet oil's emergence from the calamity has been stark. Futures rallied to a one-year high near $60 a barrel in London last week as Chinese consumption surpasses pre-virus levels. The vaccine rollout restores confidence, and the OPEC cartel and its allies keep a tight leash on supply. With Western economies still pounded by a high death toll and lockdowns, demand for transport fuels, particularly in aviation, remains depressed. But it's roaring for the petroleum products that cater to a society working and consuming at home, ones that power ships, make plastics, and fire up space heaters. The recovery is proceeding at a faster rate than people perceived, said Ed Morse, head of commodities research at Citigroup, Inc. The demand recovery is going to look stellar. The inventory draw is significantly greater than what many people thought. The sudden reversal is a salve for an array of producers. It's offering supermajors like ExxonMobil Corporation and BP PLC a glimmer of hope after a grueling year. For countries like Iraq and Angola, which have sought aid from the International Monetary Fund to quell economic crises, it's a lifeline. Even wealthier exporters like Saudi Arabia consider the extra revenue crucial. Plunging stockpiles. The strongest sign of the recovery is one of the most esoteric, a price structure known as backwardation. Near-term futures contracts have built up a sizable premium relative to later months, indicating immediate supplies are tightening fast. One gauge watched closely by crude traders, the difference between contracts based on North Sea Brent crude settling in December versus those a year later, has surged to a two-year high of $2.84 a barrel. That's a signal for refiners to dig in to the huge stockpiles that built up during the worst of last year's demand slump. These inventories are plunging everywhere, from major depots in the U.S., China, and the United Arab Emirates, to the tanker fleet once commandeered to house spare barrels at sea.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram education section for Tuesday, February the 9th. Books are need windows, mirrors for students. One day during my fourth grade year, I finished my work early and settled in with a book in our classroom library. At some point later, I honestly have no idea how much later, I looked up to see that my entire class, including my teacher, was gone. I found them in the classroom next door, but to this day I am amazed that roughly 25 fourth graders could leave without my hearing a thing. That is what it means to get lost in a book. Getting lost in a book is a wonderful escape. We know the importance of reading for children's cognitive and academic development, and reading is also important for a child's social and emotional development. More than 30 years ago, Emily Style coined the phrase curriculum as window and mirror. Just as I can see what is happening on my street corner from my kitchen window, a curricular window provides a view into someone else's experience. Curricular windows take us to other places and times and help us develop empathy for people whose perspectives and experiences are different from our own. We can learn about what it was like to live without indoor plumbing and electricity, how people of other religions celebrate their beliefs, and what people around the globe eat and drink. Those windows enrich our children's knowledge of the world and take them outside of their everyday lives. Just as important as those windows are mirrors, which allow us to see ourselves. Effective curriculum must also speak to students' own experiences. They need to know where they came from to help build a sense of self. When they identify with the people and places about which they are learning, they feel that they belong. Our curriculum, school libraries, classroom libraries, and home libraries should be full of windows and mirrors. Of course, books that are windows for some are mirrors for others, and that's where the beauty of a robust curriculum and library lie. Two children can read the same book and come away with different feelings. One child will say, "That family looks just like mine when they celebrate Hanukkah. I like their story." Another child will say, "I had no idea that some families celebrate Hanukkah. I like their story." Having windows and mirrors promotes conversations with teachers, parents, and other students. They start to recognize all the ways that people are the same and to build a vocabulary for the ways in which they are different. Being able to discuss differences in a respectful, empathetic, and curious way is an essential life skill that prepares children for productive peer relationships and active citizenship. Windows and mirrors also fuel students' curiosity. When reading a book that is a mirror, children are motivated to learn more about their families, their past, and their culture. They ask questions and are eager to share answers. When they get a window, children can dive into learning everything they can about this new topic. Just as children devour books about dinosaurs, they can also lose themselves in stories of another country, another time, or another culture. I wish I could remember which book I was reading on that day long ago when the immediate world vanished. But I do know my life is richer from being a lifelong reader. As you think about the books that you read yourself, the books that you read with your children, and the books that your children read on their own, look for those windows and mirrors. Commentary from the Houston Chronicle. Cancel the in-person star. Schools get a pass. Kids should too. After nearly a year of an educational environment pulled apart by a pandemic, many are at the breaking point. Now the state of Texas is adding to the load. We struggle to understand the trade-off in priorities, accountability over safety, that has prompted the Texas Education Agency to insist that all students report for in-person STAR testing and that high school students pass end-of-course exams to graduate. Our questions to the agency went unanswered, but TEA owes Texas families an explanation. Even in an ordinary school year, the merits of the STAR as an accurate measure of learning are debatable. When instruction has been fractured and uneven, a standardized test cannot be a fair barometer. How can it pinpoint learning gaps without taking into account the wildly different levels of instruction children are receiving, or the impact of compound traumas on scores? It is foolhardy to proceed with the STAR, especially since this year the test will not count towards school accountability. School administrators get a pass, but kids don't. Forcing students to take the test in person, adding to their stress and potentially exposing them and their teachers to a deadly virus, seems counter to the priorities of safety, flexibility, and parental discretion that have thus far guided state policies. The stakes for high school seniors, those in virtual classes who don't show up for the exams, may not be able to graduate, seems needlessly callous. Miguel Cardona, President Biden's pick for Secretary of Education, alluded to that during his confirmation hearing on Wednesday. If the conditions under COVID-19 prevent a student from being in school in person, I don't think we need to be bringing students in just to test them. Fact is, the blanket testing mandate on public schools across Texas doesn't take into account the varying degrees to which districts and schools are adhering to safety protocols, or the fact that one exposure is enough to contract the virus. There are vigilant parents who haven't sent their children back to in-person classes because they distrust, often for good reason, the commitment of local school officials to take COVID-19 seriously. The state is allowing districts to set up satellite centers that will accommodate testing while maintaining strong public health practices. Districts can also apply for waivers so students not scheduled to take the STAR could learn remotely, freeing up space for test takers to social distance. But so far, TEA has not specified any coronavirus prevention measures during testing. And what about the time and resources needed to set up alternate testing sites or the impact on districts whose budgets are already tight? We're in the middle of a life-threatening pandemic, State Representative Alma Allen from Dallas said Wednesday at a press conference where Texas House Democratic Caucus members called for the cancellation of the in-person STAR. We also cannot ask our teachers or our school personnel, students, and families to put themselves to risk for an unnecessary test. Let me emphasize, unnecessary. Educators don't need to a test to tell them what is known. Many Texas students, grappling with cascading pandemic stresses and disruptions, are struggling. Failure rates are up. Attendance is spotty. Kids are experiencing high levels of depression and anxiety. Those considerations are why State Senator Jose Menendez of San Antonio has filed a bill to cancel this year's STAR, and why a growing number of states are requesting federal waivers to cancel their own standardized tests. The Biden administration extended the deadline for waivers, but needs to act decisively by granting states permission to forego the tests, as the Trump administration did last spring. Last March, Governor Greg Abbott made the wise choice of canceling STAR tests, noting then, "Your health and safety are top priorities, and the state of Texas will give school districts flexibility to protect and ensure the health of students, faculty, and their families." At the time, Texas had only recorded one death from COVID-19, and compared with the current toll of 2.4 million cases and more than 37,000 deaths. While it is true that Texas and the world have learned a great deal about the coronavirus in the past year, including how to prevent it, its continued spread and worrisome mutations show we still have a lot to learn. Abbott should keep health and safety as top priorities, far above a faulty barometer or of statewide student performance, made even less effective by erratic variations in instruction this past year.
Used aspirin as an example of dosing by weight and age. A pediatric nurse practitioner wrote with the concern that aspirin should be avoided in children under 16 due to the risk of Reyes syndrome. I would add that the risk of Reyes syndrome is highest in children and teens with influenza or chickenpox. I recommend against aspirin for children, except under orders of the child's pediatrician. Dr. Roach regrets that he is unable to answer individual letters, but will incorporate them in the column whenever possible. Readers may email questions to yourgoodhealth at med.cornell.edu. That's toyourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu. Or send mail to 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32803. To Your Good Health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Privacy becomes an issue after a woman discovers affair. Dear Abby, because my fiancé and I have had bad experiences in the past, we settled on just living together for the last 17 years. He has been like a husband to me and faithful all these years. Recently, however, I caught him in an online affair. I checked his phone one day out of the blue, something I have never done before because we respect each other's privacy. The emails were daily back and forth, with only one mentioning a sexual encounter at the beginning. He confessed that he had made a big mistake once and refused to see her again in person, but had kept up the correspondence. He begged me to forgive him, and I agreed, since we were together for so long. The problem is, now we argue about his phone. He still expects the same privacy with it. I don't feel comfortable with that now. Does he still deserve the same privacy? Hung up in Ohio. Dear Hung Up, no, he does not. What he deserves is the chance to rebuild your trust, and that involves accountability on his part, which includes allowing you access to his phone if you feel insecure. After 17 years together, both of you have a large emotional investment in this relationship. Because of that, it might be beneficial to schedule some sessions with a licensed relationship counselor to figure out where it went off the rails. Dear Abby, I read your column every day. I know sometimes you suggest people see a doctor, either medical or psychological. What do you do if you are terrified of doctors? I have asthma and consult my doctor via a computer, but some doctors, like dentists, can't do that. I have horrible panic attacks and anxiety. Then my asthma kicks in, I can't breathe, and I cry uncontrollably. I don't want to take medications because they make me sleepy. Because I'm so doped up, someone has to come with me to the doctor to drive me home and watch me be an uncontrollable mess. Also, missing a whole day of work for a one-hour doctor appointment is, in my opinion, ridiculous. I think I'd rather be sick than go to the doctor. My family insists it's all in my head and I should just get over it, but because of many horrible experiences at doctor's offices, which I believe caused my fear, I just can't. The current situation with the worldwide COVID epidemic has made my anxiety worse. Your thoughts? Terrified to go there. Dear Terrified, my thought is that you need to ask your doctor or your insurance company for a referral to a licensed psychologist who specializes in phobias and panic attacks. Many of them consult with their patients online these days. Once you finally get a handle on that problem, the rest will be easier. While few people relish the idea of going to the doctor or dentist, not doing what is necessary to protect your health can be dangerous. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Horoscopes. Happy birthday for Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Exciting, colorful, and productive, you serve many people of all directions. Enthusiastically, you initiate new projects, always ready to add a different perspective. This year, you do much reflection And later in the year, you present life-changing ideas. If single, it is a year of introspection and love possibilities. If attached, love will go well and you will find a deepening in your communication. Virgo cheers you up. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. 3 stars. It's a good day for public work, career, and your dharma. Later in the day, community organizations will call your attention. It is an excellent day for starting a healing path for yourself. Tonight, you have excellent community and career opportunities. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 4 stars. The morning finds you in deep spiritual reflection and considering a sacred journey. The afternoon will be the time to work on your career. Connect with colleagues from your work and other friends. Hopes and wishes flourish. Tonight, special plans for spiritual retreat. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 4 stars. In the morning, you will feel the connection to the ancestors as well as a deep reflection within. Work on your heart, mind, and soul in the afternoon, for you'll be spiritually inclined. You will also have a good time with the mystery. Tonight, spiritual reflection. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 4 stars. There are deep discussions with loved ones in the morning. Hopeful and loving times. There will be a time to reflect on ancestors and people who have gone on. It will be an inward time as well. Tonight, sweet, loving time with your favorite ancestor. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 3 stars. Go to the gym, dance, or take a long walk. Improve your health by adding a daily supplement or healthy herbs. Also, it's a good time for working with your employees and working at your job. Tonight, a loving time with your partner and loved ones. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 3 stars. Your morning is spent on your creative path. Romance is brewing. Let your inner child play. The afternoon will be the best time to go to the gym or take a good walk. Tonight, perfect for light, healthy food and contemplating your work situation. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 3 stars. The day begins with a focus on projects in your home and or sitting in self-reflection. The afternoon is for utilizing crafting energies as well as for enjoying family. Tonight, a good time to spend time with art, children, or romance. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 4 stars. It's a good day to say what you've been meaning to say. The truth is revealed. The afternoon is a very pleasant time at home, and you can get some domestic things done. Cook something good. Tonight, sweet with delicious neighbor time. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 5 stars. This is an excellent time to work on finances and all things that support you. You will receive great information, connection, and communication from out of town. Tonight, adventurous. Take a little trip across town for an exotic dinner and socially distanced conversation. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 5 stars. After some in-depth reflection, it's time to come out and be yourself and have the best of times. The afternoon will be a good time to work with your finances. Tonight, go out for dinner or get takeout and make a list of your financial priorities. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 4 stars. Journal your insightful dreams from last night. Meditate and pray this deep, receptive morning. New ideas come on strong. The afternoon is a fun time to do something good for yourself, like paint a room or buy an outfit. Tonight, get organized for the next day. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 4 stars. Your morning time is superior for community work, friends, and emphasizing your hopes and wishes. In the afternoon, spend time with yourself in spiritual reflection and write your own mission statement. There will be true psychic insights and pathfinders. Tonight, intense daydreams.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.